Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Hello and welcome. I'm Tony Mitchell and I'll be hosting this programme in which we will be discussing current trends with regard to the role of learning technologies in adult education. With me in the studio are our panel from the Talking Eds team. We have Kainat Khurshid from Pakistan and Hannah Bland from the United Kingdom. Both Kainat and Hannah are studying at the University of Malta for a semester as part of their Erasmus Mundus International Master in Adult Education for Social Change. They are also currently enrolled in an online research methods module delivered through the Open University of Cyprus. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
We also have our studio guest for this programme, Aysara Yesenova, about whom just a few words by way of an introduction. Aysara, who is from Kazakhstan, is also a student on the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change course. She holds a bachelor's degree in teaching English as a foreign language and a master's degree in multilingual education. Aysara has experience of teaching English and has also undertaken educational management and research work. Aysara is interested in the potential of learning technologies in relation to widening educational participation and has a special interest in massive open online courses, which are often referred to as MOOCs. These are free courses designed to be studied online by large numbers of participants. Welcome to you, Aysara.
Thank you very much.
Aysara, many people may not be familiar with MOOCs. Could you provide a very brief explanation of what they are and how they work from your experience?
Well, to begin with, massive online open courses were introduced, if I'm not mistaken, in 2010 or 2012 as a way of increasing participation via providing online courses from the world-class universities. The principle is very simple and it's very positive. So enroll online and have access to the best courses, and it's for free. Mm. And this is like an asynchronous way of teaching and learning. So a tutor prepares a material and like provides subtitles or the notes, and a learner can listen and watch the video later.
Yeah, as you said, you've done bachelor's before and a master's, and you also said you've done a MOOC. How did they compare?
Well, that's a very good question, I would say. But when it comes to the ground, I would say it's my real lived experience of enrolling in MOOC. I would say I'm very undisciplined learner myself, because the notion of discipline and like time management and persistence, they're very relevant to completion of MOOC. And I would say I can participate in the first three sessions like in one day and then just leave it and marinate it and just open the file like only next month. I would say there is a like very big difference between being a tutor yourself in the formal settings and being a student out of the classroom via enrolling to MOOCs. Yeah. And I would say I'm very lazy learner.
I see, because you have one foot in the learner camp and one foot in the teacher camp.
Yes, that's the perfect expression, I would say.
And it's said that disruptive technologies such as MOOCs facilitate a shift from the teacher to the learner.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you feel about that? Is that what happens, and is that a good thing?
When it comes to MOOCs, if we want to move from teacher-centered teaching to more student-centered for collaborative learning, the quality of peer review is very important. Because as you mentioned in the beginning when introducing a MOOC, like there are big numbers of enrollees. For example, if I'm not mistaken, one of the courses offered by Massachusetts
Institute of Technology, MIT.
Yes, sorry. Thank you for this memory. Yes, the number of enrollees initially reached like 10,000 people. And with this number, it would be very challenging to provide teacher feedback to everyone.
Yeah, this is a very impersonal way of learning.
And in this case, the quality of feedback and support from your peers sitting at the other side of the planet, it's amazing. But personally, I was a bit discouraged initially when I did my first MOOC on the history of education. And there was an assignment, please describe your educational experience and try to say what you would change after getting to know John Dewey. And then I invested my time and energy and my passion and I wrote this and tried to like put my heart and soul, and I sent it to my peer, and I didn't receive any feedback at all.
No response?
No response at all.
So this was disheartening.
It was a bit heartbreaking, and also it showed me that the relationships between and release, they're very crucial, yeah. And if you want to move from like teacher-centered to more student-centered to more collaborative without geographical boundaries, this like personal connections between learners, they will affect the quality of learning.
I agree with that, that the personal relationships, they are quite important when it comes to learning for certain people. For instance, myself, I'm a learner who likes to be present in a classroom where I can see other people and interact with them. And especially, I would like to have my teacher or my facilitator to be present there. And it's the first time that I'm doing an online distance learning course, and I find it very impersonal in nature. And I would also like to have your comment on the fact that how accessible are these things, these learning technologies, because last semester, 2016, was the first time that I actually heard about a thing called MOOC. And before that, I have never heard of it. And I did a whole undergrad degree without having any distance learning course in it. And I come from a country where internet is not easily accessible for everyone. So how would you like to comment on the accessibility of these learning technologies like MOOCs and other things?
This is an issue of digital inclusion.
Thank you, Kanai, for this question. What I would say, we can discuss accessibility from different perspective. Is it like accessibility in terms of like getting to know that this opportunity exists? Second one, it's more like in terms of like digital inclusion, as Tony mentioned. Do people have decent Wi-Fi or like mobile data to access the files? Third one, it's and means to pay for the broadband connection. Third one, it's in terms of health. Does the MOOC platform have assistive technologies, for instance, visual assistive technologies or special scripts written in Braille? Or what's about for people who has like hearing impairments, how they would access MOOC, because all the videos, they are based on sound. You need to listen and see. And the last one, it's from my point of view, it's the issue of language. Talking about that, if I speak one of the known like regional languages, but I'm not fluent in English or German or Italian or Spanish, how I would be able to access?
Now, these courses are ostensibly free. Is that true? And if so, what incentives do the institutions have? Why do they offer these courses?
It's very, very touchy issue when it comes to finance. The rhetoric behind MOOC is social justice, giving chance to people with limited resources to get the best, like cherry-picked courses from the most prestigious universities. But when it comes to like real life, and like as Christensen said, is one of the like people who introduced the term disruptive technology. For technology to be disruptive, it should be cost efficient. People with limited resources, they should be able to access it, and then it should be user friendly. And in this case, MOOC, they're based on the business model, so that in the long-term run, they will generate the revenue for the platform. And there is a special like business model that institutions like universities, they will become more internationally recognized by getting students from different countries. And then the popularity of the institution will rise, as well as the number of enrollees will increase. And also when we talked about, like, are they free or they just sound as to be free? Some universities, they offer to send you a certificate if you complete the course. There are, like, requirements. But you should pay at least $50, $80, $100. If you want officially recognized paper that you completed this course on like big data. Because to the best of my knowledge, for now, there are no officially recognized ways of acknowledging the credits. And mostly those MOOC, they are credit bearing.
Okay.
And I wondered what that meant for
the hierarchy of universities that's happening in a globalized world. Mm-hmm. And what this means for the smaller universities, if the higher universities can afford to put MOOCs out there, mm-hmm. and they're using it as a marketing strategy to bring in international students mm-hmm. who pay fees, and then I assume getting more money from that, then what's going to happen to the small universities and institutions which don't have the means to do that and can't market themselves in that way?
Yeah, it's very like exact explanation of how this hierarchy and big game between universities can unveil when developing MOOCs.
It just seems to be a way of reinforcing the hierarchy within these educational institutions, and then again, the universities with higher amount of budgets to support mm-hmm. these MOOCs, they are basically putting themselves out there to earn even more money, and that makes mm-hmm. me really critical of this approach, because a lot of times people who are taking these courses, these are the people who have already got mm-hmm. some education, and now they are getting to know like further whatever they are interested in. Mm-hmm. So the demographics of it, like who are these people and what kind of socioeconomic background are they coming from? So mm-hmm. is there like a certain target group that these universities are approaching or reaching out to so that they can make more money out of it?
I'd actually like to answer that one because I'm familiar with a couple of studies mm-hmm. in the UK. And what's quite interesting about MOOCs is that in comparing two studies, so one study was in Scotland about traditional students coming into higher education. They were mostly motivated for career enhancement. And in a study by Edinburgh University about coming into MOOC learning, they were more motivated by personal interest and curiosity. So it was a different type of education they were looking for, and that kind of speaks to a different group. And generally people, perhaps with the luxury of time and interest in their own self-discovery, so it might not speak to a lot of adults that have multiple responsibilities and families, and like we said earlier about the digital divide, many older people are not engaging in it. And there are other studies that show generally it's the people of higher socioeconomic status, already mm-hmm. educated people that mm-hmm. are engaging with these MOOCs.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And this is an area I'm sure that we could talk mm-hmm. about for a long time, but at this stage we'll take the opportunity mm-hmm. to pause for a few moments and gather our thoughts as we ask our guest to suggest a piece of music of their choosing. Aisara, your choice of music please, and why?
Oh, we'll have some music. I would ask, and I would be really happy if we can listen to Adai, this instrumental music by one of the famous composers from Kazakhstan, Kurmangazi. And why? Because I'm homesick.
Okay, very well, here it is. Thank you for that choice, Aisara. And coming back to the discussion, we've covered MOOCs quite extensively, but there are also other learning technologies which can be useful and accessible in helping mm-hmm. learners to engage with learning. To Aisara, to the panel, what other learning technologies do we think are the most useful and accessible?
I mean, well, as me as a learner, I tend to learn everything just by Googling it. It might come up on YouTube or a blog or a forum, but I would use those arguably as a learning technology in themselves when I'm looking for answers. Mm-hmm. Don't know about you guys.
For me, if it's something I'm researching which is connected to current affairs or news, I would love to learn it through blogs because I like how different people view certain situations and their take on it, and it gives a sort of a critical perspective just instead of going through mainstream media. So mm-hmm. I like having what people put out there in terms of blog. So for me, it's a way of learning, and I love it.
Yeah, different people have different ways of exploring something new. Mostly I use my phone as a laptop, as like, and for entertainment. And I'd prefer like to be mobile and carry my phone with me. And technologies, learning technologies, apart from the buzzword in MOOCs, they're different. It can be even starting from the websites, like search engines, like Google. Now I see the benefits of Wikipedia, written in like in simple language and taking care of the readership. I see the progress in different like mobile apps available on iOS platform or Android. And I also see the use of just simple phones for calls and short messages as also as a way of learning. And for other learning technologies, it's different multimedia used by educators for in the formal settings. And now we are like doing course online in like Blackboard collaboration when the tutor is in Cyprus and the PowerPoint presentation is there, and we type questions online. We raise our hand by pressing the button, can I speak? And then that question, and then everything is recorded. And like if you miss the class, you can watch it later. And even the platforms for storing data like Dropbox, Google Drive, it's also a way of learning. Like 4 years ago, I had no idea about Google Drive, but once I started to learn, I was like, oh, I can edit like this document, and Hannah is in the UK, I'm in Kazakhstan, but we can work online and Hannah can track my progress. It's also a way of learning, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not as on it as you are, Sarah. I think I only discovered Google Drive about 3 months ago, but it has changed my life as a learner. I used to have to email myself documents all the time. It's amazing that it's up there and we can work together collaboratively. And also with Facebook groups as well, I find that useful as a learner, not only by being a student and making student groups, but also like community groups can share information on Facebook and co-create things using polls and voting. Mm-hmm. It's really amazing.
Yeah, on that I would like to mention that in the past couple of months since we started doing this online course, I have realized the power of co-creation of knowledge, because in these courses or in these type of learning technologies, the presence of facilitator or teacher is not that wide, whereas the presence of peers or people we are learning with is more prominent, and there's a better scope or a greater scope of learning from each other or learning from your peers or people participating in the same course. Mm-hmm. And I think it's amazing because I have learned so much from my peers in these past few months than I have learned on my own while accessing these technologies, because sometimes someone present in the group has more knowledge on how to use certain software, on how to use certain technology or gadget or device. And I think it's a good way of building social capital in a sense, because now I'm connected to certain people in an online community that I wouldn't have been, and now I have more connections. I think it's just amazing in that regard.
I also think in some ways it's empowering, because we are, as learners, we're also producers of knowledge now online, whereas the old distance learning kind of technologies, that would be a teacher putting information out there and we would all receive it. Now we are creating it and we're creating it together. But then again, like as educators also, I wonder where that puts us. Like, are we going to be obsolete now in this globalized 21st century world?
Oh, teachers versus computers. Teachers versus like inanimate technologies. Personally, I would say no technology can replace human interaction.
True that.
Full of emotions. Because personally, maybe I'm an old-fashioned person, but I prefer, like, when I teach, I want to see my students, and I can have, like, one lesson plan before stepping in, but once I start, and how I see how learners interact with me, how learners interact between themselves, and even how learners don't interact at all, it tells me in which way I should direct the learning now. And I modify my teaching activities when I read the emotions of my students.
What you just said makes me realize the importance of blended teaching these days, that we know the importance of these learning technologies, and we know with the growing pace of technology, it's so much important to include them. But then again, the human interaction, the very personal nature of teaching and education has its importance, and it cannot be denied. And I think we being educators, it's really important for us to realize the balance that we need to create while educating or while facilitating.
There was a study in Scotland in which they interviewed trainee teachers to look at their attitude towards learning technologies, and they found out that while the attitudes were positive, the actual reality of how willing these trainee teachers were to implement the use of technology depended to quite a great extent on their own level of confidence, you know, how well prepared they felt or how much knowledge they had in terms of the use of these technologies, and that trainee teachers were not always very well trained in how to use these technologies. So perhaps this is something that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, absolutely. I was doing a teaching course before, and actually this one is sort of a teaching course, and we haven't learned anything about using technologies, and I would feel very unconfident using technologies in class. But also in terms of teaching like critical skills, I would worry that in the online world, people aren't engaging in a critical way. And there's it could be a really good opportunity. So to look with the students at the internet, like what adverts are we being exposed to and why, and look at the parallels of somebody's Facebook timeline against another person's. Why are we seeing these different worlds? And I would wonder, sorry, to bring it back to MOOCs, but I know that on the FutureLearn, which is the UK platform for MOOCs, there's a computer algorithm which allows you to prioritize the comments of learners and choose like your favorite peers. So you will only see what they put up. And I worry that would reduce your world and what you understand to be the reality and silence others that are less popular or less seen as less legitimate in some way. So I would worry about that sort of critical education aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, regarding to the like how to train teachers to use technology in the classroom in formal and informal settings, and how to teach critical literacy. These are two big questions. And as Tony said, like going back to that research in Scotland, when I was doing my like undergrad in teaching, I hardly can remember that I had a course on like to bring in technologies into classroom, where I received like actual training. Maybe because it was before when those technologies exploded. Now this era of industrialization and those like high tech world. Maybe it's in the question of time, and also the teacher trainees, preservers, teachers. They can be afraid, yeah. But I had like an incident when I brought like very like fancy PowerPoint, when I put my head on so, but it didn't work, and I couldn't even open my memory stick, and my students, they were like, "You're like dinosaur." But also, yeah, it's a question how you use it.
I think this might be an issue for educators, is that many people go into education not because they like technology or see themselves as technicians. They have a separate idea of what a teacher is. A learning technician is something that's slightly different. You know, they would study computer science or some other related course if that was their area of interest. So there's a separation between the technical aspect in terms of technology and the teaching aspect as well. So how do we address that?
Well, I just wonder, because I know that technology is changing and it is becoming more accessible. I can see these issues as being very relevant, but maybe less so even now, because people are engaging in technology every day. And like we were talking about Google Docs and co-creation, I think it's maybe going to improve as people become more confident in using technologies, I would hope, anyway.
Yeah. And also it's a question of like, of acknowledging that you don't know something and you'll need to ask for help. But for some people, it's like, oh, if I say that I can't use this, other would think that I'm like not modern or not literate enough in computer skills. But it's also about asking for help and like expressing the eagerness to learn.
I think it falls both on the part of the teacher as well as the students in a classroom situation that they both show some sort of interest in these learning technologies, because no matter how much we try to avoid these are a big part of our lives these days and we can't run from them anyways. So I think we being educators, we need to have like some basic knowledge about how to operate them. And then again, when we are using these technologies or delivering material through them, we should be aware of the critical nature of education that we need to impart as well. And I think it's really important on the part of educators that they are aware of how these technologies can be disruptive for learners and how they can make them significant in terms of providing correct material or critical material through them. So I think it's a huge responsibility.
Yes, and it will take time, I guess, developing that critical literacy and a critical perspective, yeah.
Okay. I suppose it comes back to the issue of these technologies can be so inclusive in terms of, I think, for instance, Second Life, the online platform where people create an avatar and interact in an online platform. They can communicate across languages. There's something called a language debabbler, which will translate between different languages. And because people go online and create an avatar, it means that barriers of age or disability and things like that can be removed. But again, we come back to the inclusion in that people need to have access to this. People need to have an internet connection or even a stable power supply that people don't have in some parts of the world. So while it can also be very inclusive and break down a lot of barriers, people can also end up being excluded. And this has to be something that we face up to as well.
Yeah.
Well, clearly, the development of learning technologies is a fast-moving area and educators need to keep abreast of the continual advances. The question for critical educators may well be, how can they utilise suitable learning technologies within their practice while maintaining their commitment to social change? And I'm afraid that's where we'll have to leave our discussion for now. Thank you to our panel, Kainat Khurshid and Hannah Bland, for their valuable contribution. Also, thank you to our guest, Aisara Yesenova, for sharing her expertise with us.
Thank you.
And thank you to our technician, Samuel. The Talking Ed series is available online at maltauniversitybroadcasting.com. All that remains is for me to say thank you for listening and goodbye.